Just behave yourselves and act like men.
Now you start using your head. That's not love. That's 3 feet above your ass.
People will come, Ray.
All right, don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascist.
We don't stink right now.
You play ball like a girl!
You're out of here!
There's no crying in baseball!
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
This is West Coast Bias.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
Indeed it has. Thank you for joining us once again.
Yes, thank you. Welcome back to our West Coast Bias Baseball Podcast, where, well, at least one of us has something to celebrate. We have waited to... come back out. We have a lot to unpack with maybe a little bit of the NLCS, definitely the World Series, and a little bit that has happened after, immediately following the end of the World Series. There's a bit of controversy. We'll get in that. But before,
you're not speaking about my blackout.
No.
Got it.
Before we do get into that, I need to listen carefully because I'm only going to say this once. Congratulations to the Los Angeles Dodgers on a well-played season. They were clearly the best team all year. They played like it. Now that that's over, I don't have to say it again. I remember when the last time the Dodgers won the World Series in 1988, and been there, done that, didn't buy the t-shirt. So 37% of the season, but it was all very well played, and it was very little doubt in my mind that they were going to win the whole shebang.
It was 100% of the abbreviated season. I may correct you a little bit there. It feels good.
Yeah, the hunk of metal means a lot.
Yeah, that piece of metal means a lot. And what means even more, well, I guess it doesn't mean more, but as soon as Manfred stepped on the field to give out that piece of metal, just nonstop boos.
It was pretty amazing audio to hear just the chorus of boos, and he was trying to speak through them, and he was a little perplexed as to why he was being boozed. I think that really just shows just how out of touch our commissioner is. Really sad to watch.
He seemed out of touch in the connection between his brain and his vocal cords as well. It sounded as if he had recently had a stroke, which wouldn't be funny, except for that I don't think he did, and it was just really strange. I think because he had two earpieces in or something. I don't know.
Maybe the audio...
It was really disturbing. It was really weird.
Maybe audio equipment was being messed with because of the sheer... ferocity of the chorus of boos coming from
boos and boos.
It's about
we love it. Maybe because it was October, and maybe because Halloween was near, but it almost seemed like he was from like a David Cronenberg movie. Like I figured, like it was like Scanners, like right before his head explodes. It was really strange. His voice started to get really slow, and anyway, that was pretty great.
There's about, 14,000 people that were allowed in the Texas barn to watch.
I think
watch
it was 10 or 11, because it's like a quarter, and there's 44,000 maybe.
Certainly sounded like it for most of the series that the majority were Dodger fans.
I think so. Blue travels well, and Texas isn't too far from L.A. It's not very close, and I guess it's maybe equidistant to Georgia.
A heck of a drive.
It's closer to Florida, in a sense, I guess, Tampa as well. Tampa was a great team, Kevin Cash got through not just this season, but many other seasons before this, getting to the postseason, managing the way that he typically manages. But I think for just one small moment, he thought he was Doc Roberts, and he realized he wasn't. And you can't always go with the sheets, and maybe it was, in fact, I'm sure it was almost likely it wasn't just his decision to pull Snell, of course, in the sixth. But we are not upset about that here on the West Coast.
Well, not maybe not all of us upset about that.
That was pretty good. I know this is over a week old now, but
yeah, no, Bruce Bochy would not have pulled Snell.
Tony
La Russa probably would not have pulled Snell.
What about Dusty Baker?
Dusty Baker, I don't know. Dusty Baker has a habit of leaving his guys in too long, so I don't think that he would have pulled him out as well.
I mean, I don't think anybody would have pulled
him. It was the only the second hit of the game that he had allowed there in the sixth inning, and the guys coming up, they were, you know, the big hitters with Betts and Seager coming up, but
they had all struck out twice.
They were 0-for-3 in the game, and they were not looking forward to facing him again, and were definitely relieved to see him leaving the game at that point.
Oh yeah, and Mookie gave a little wry smile over to Dave Roberts when he saw the
taking out a pitcher that is dealing like that in such a big moment is such a psychological boost for whoever it is.
Especially Mookie there. Betts, especially the possible MVP winner coming up. But, you know, Cash's decision, I guess, comes down to whether or not you believe in small sample sizes. You know, I mean, he kept saying that Nick Anderson had been the best reliever for the past two seasons. And in a lot of ways, he wasn't wrong. But given his postseason,
as opposed to his regular season, he gave up
10 times the runs in the postseason as he did in the regular season.
Yeah. And
literally 10-1. I mean, it's just.
And given up one run in each in the previous, like, six or seven games that he had played in.
Yeah, every game. I think every appearance, the last like five or six, he had given up at least a run. And there was only a one-run game at that point, obviously. And pretty great. Pretty great. I mean, why not give it to Diego Castillo? You know? Loop was the guy, you know?
I still don't think you pull Snell. If you're going to pull Snell, wait till the end of the inning or gives up the run.
Are we still having this conversation if he brings in Castillo
instead? Because he'd
been hot.
The only way that we're not having this conversation is...
Get out of here and don't come back.
That was weird.
Yeah. The only way we're not having this discussion is if the move works and the Dodgers don't score the run that inning to tie the game.
Even if they get that one run to tie it with somebody like Diego Castillo, I still don't think he gets as much criticism.
Well,
it was who he brought in, as much as who he took out.
Yeah, no matter what, we're not having this discussion if the Rays
win that
game and we have a game seven, we're not having this discussion. Maybe we're having an entirely different discussion about a mismanaged move during game seven. But I think the lesson that this decade of World Series has taught us is that the World Series and the postseason in general is not the same as the regular season. And it needs to be managed just a little bit differently than you would in a regular season game because of the very unforgiving nature of the games.
I agree. You have to go to the hot hand. You have to really use your eyes as much as your brain.
The eye test is really important and it must factor in to what you're looking at on any stat sheet.
A great example of that is Dave Roberts letting Julio Urias obviously finish the seventh, but then go into the eighth, finish that, and then finish the ninth. I mean, he could have given it to anybody else, and he sort of, quote-unquote, fresher arm. He knew Rias was dealing. He was lights out. He was locked in and calm, man. That was the thing. He was zenned out, and it looked amazing, and I love the man.
And then that intensity was certainly there, and it was noticed, and I applaud Roberts for leaving him in. Because unless there is a real reason why you need to take out a pitcher that is dealing, you don't take that pitcher out.
Right.
You let him deal. Let, you know, ride or die with the horse that is working.
Got to dance with the dame who brung you.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of right-handers that he was facing up toward the end there. And, man, I love to see Urias get that. You know, I know he's got a lot of family in Mexico, and they were watching. That's a big deal, you know. In a lot of ways, I mean, obviously Corey Seager was the de facto MVP of that series. It was
amazing performance by Seager.
You know, I got the willies the most. I got that joy, that innate...
That shiver down your spine. Yeah, like, man. Oh my God, this is happening.
From Urias, you know, because when he came in, he was calm, I was calm. And it's pretty crazy coming from a 24-year-old, you know, just big game pitcher written all over him.
Yeah.
Well, really glad to see that. And Julio Urias and Madison Bumgarner are now... in equal company.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they're the only two pitchers in history with 4 wins and a save in a single postseason. Of course, Bumgarner did that in 2014.
Right.
That's pretty good company, you know.
Yeah?
Bumgarner regular season, you know, he's good. Bumgarner postseason, he's elite.
Yeah.
And it would be nice, it was nice to finally see some Dodgers... get up there in that company.
We love it!
That's going to be all on deck for you all year.
Well, you said that Seager was the de facto MVP of the series. Now, you're speaking only because the Dodgers won, because there was another guy who arguably had a much better performance than even Seager.
Mr. Sandy Rice?
Sandy Rice.
Rosarena. Yeah.
He was amazing. I found a pretty incredible graphic that compared his performance to the 96 rookie postseason performance by one Derek Jeter.
Great.
And
he passed him, right?
In a way, RBIs wasn't on the graphic, but I imagine he probably did because, he had the same amount of hits, 22, had the same average, 361.
Wow.
He had
triple the home runs,
home runs versus just one by Mr. Jeter.
Makes sense.
And an OPS of 1.22 as compared to Jeter's... mere 868.
Yeah.
This guy's future is bright, and I hope we see him again in the postseason because he was really good. He played hard, he played with joy, and man, is he just crushing the ball.
Yeah, he was really dangerous as a hitter to see and to have to go up against. I picked him up in fantasy, and it's the end of August or so, and all he did was kill it. All he did was crush the ball. It was great. And it was nice to sort of see a guy that's that young, even though he's not that young, but he's still technically a rookie, come up and then not be phased once the postseason started.
Yeah.
And, just tore the cover off the ball, destroyed all those rookie records. Yeah,
not only was he unfazed, he looked like he relished the moment and took full advantage of the stage that he was on.
Yeah.
Because he was on fire all throughout the playoffs. And it wasn't just the World Series, but... wow.
Yeah, he was fun to watch. And I'm sure his fantasy value is going to skyrocket now after the postseason.
No doubt.
Corey Seager passed a man that I'm sure up until 2010 was haunted your dreams. And probably you hated just the name alone, probably still incurs the wrath of goosebumps, not unlike the rally monkey, but that would be one Scott Spezio in 2002.
Spezio, yeah.
With 19 RBIs, Corey Seager finished this postseason with 20. Only the only person with more is David Freeze, 2011, St. Louis.
Right. which may enter in a discussion we have later on. But I don't know. You know, it's is the monkey off of Kershaw's back?
100%.
Yeah.
Monkey's off the entire franchise's back.
Well,
3 out of 4 pennants. And, you know, 2 out of 3, let's say, no World Series, finally get the World Series win. You know, that, and now, as I'm sure you haven't really slept a good night since, you understand now that the Dodgers are, this is dynasty we're talking about. This is not just a 1 or 2 or 3-peat, but a minimum 8-peat. As
you hope, and I
as the super fans.
And no.
One sec.
You know, we'll talk about dynasty after another couple of wins. You know, it's extremely difficult to get there. It's extremely difficult to get back there.
Yeah, I know. We've done it 3 times in 4 years, and now and again, like that. There was always a pressure when you go and you don't win. And 17 obviously hurt for many, many reasons, and we didn't really know why for a few years. And then getting beat again the very following year, and then getting knocked out early the year after that. Dodgers had this, I don't know, they were pressing. I don't know what was going on. It was hard to watch. And also other teams playing them, of course, have that extra chip on their shoulder to really want it more, because the Dodgers are always expected to win it, right? And it's, especially as the, you know, as a Giants fan, you know, Giants weren't really ever favored.
No. All 3 of those World Series wins in those 5 years, they were not expected, one, to even be in the postseason, 2, to do well in the postseason, and 3, to win the World Series when they most decidedly did.
Yeah.
The toughest one being the last one that went 7 games.
I feel like there's got to be – that's got to be like a little extra motivation, you know, because – for a couple reasons, nobody's expecting you, so you want like a, you know, big F you to everybody else. But it's also, you don't really have a lot of pressure because of that, you know.
Right.
When you're expected to win, when you're favored to win, and you're constantly being told that, constantly being asked that, yeah, it's got to weigh on you a little bit, you know.
So now let me ask you a question: if you don't see another World Series win for another 20 years, will you be satisfied with this one?
Yeah, but obviously that's not going to happen. And what'll make me even more satisfied is if Manny Machado actually makes good on this promise.
What?
We'll win a World Series before you guys do.
Bet you my contract, we'll win a World Series before you guys.
Yeah, I'm really curious about this myself, Manny. If you're listening to, we're watching, and we are going to hold you to this. We need to contact that fan on Twitter, and let's start a dialogue. You did?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Like, any within an hour yet? After. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I honestly don't know how Twitter works. I think I tweet, and then I don't know what's going on. I don't ever look at it. I do. I get alerts, so if you want to contact us, I think I'll see that. But, you know, I don't know how that – I don't know, man. I'm a Luddite. I'm useless. Send your resumes to baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com if you're a budding young engineer and you need a little experience. I got a lot of need for some help here. So,
yeah.
Maybe with all this extra money that Manny's going to be giving out, maybe we can up our game a little bit.
Maybe so. If we get a piece of that, I don't know. But
now, what are the Giants going to do this hot stove season? Because obviously, I'm sure you've seen this very large list of free agents that are sitting out there, and I guess, you know, Kevin Gausman is one of them, and he was your best pitcher arguably last year.
Yes. No. So
are the Giants going to make a play to try to keep him, give him big bucks, or are you guys going to go, do you think you need more bats, get rid of Crawford, get rid of Belt? Or at least maybe platoon those guys, because you're gonna have to make room at first base, I would imagine, for Posey. Even though Joey Bart isn't really the best defensive catcher.
Well, no, and I think Joey Bart was hurt a little bit by Buster Posey's absence this year. Didn't get that hands on tutelage from. a really very good defensive catcher as he comes up. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah, I'm selling Posey a little short here. I just assume he's not going to be catching even 50% of these games. Am I wrong in assuming that?
You know, I don't know. I don't think you're completely wrong, but it's, you know, from my understanding, Buster Posey wants to catch. He likes to catch. I don't think he wants to really be the first baseman.
Can he catch?
Well, that remains to be seen. He was definitely not fully recovered from his injury in 2019, and his numbers kind of reflect that. He's been getting older, his numbers have been declining a little bit, but the most dramatic was the difference between the 105 games before he got hurt in 2018 and 140 games or so that he played in 2019 coming off that injury. So it is possible that this full year of full rest and recovery he did may give a new life to those legs, let the hip injury really heal. Maybe he does have another year or two behind the plate, and with at least serviceable power with the bat.
Wouldn't it be hard to stay motivated, to stay in shape, to stay in baseball shape when you do have a year off?
I think for some people, yeah. I don't pretend to know Buster Posey or what he thinks about, but I would imagine a professional of his reputation is that he works hard to stay in shape regardless, and he wants to play and he wants to be on that field. He chose not to this year because of his family and being and worried about his health and the overall health of the family. So I don't think that his motivation to stay in baseball shape, I think it's a little bit more difficult to do so over such a long period, but he's done it before. He managed to get back from that devastating injury in 2011 with no ill effects. Ultimately, I mean, he had a couple great years. Looking at his number, 2012, 2013, 2014, you know, his WAR was above 5. So
every year?
Yeah, 2012, we're looking at 7.6. 2013, his WAR was
7.6.
Baseball reference here.
Interesting.
5.3 in 2013 and 5.1 in 2014, and even a 6.0 in 2015. And then after that, we start seeing a slight decline, again, but arguably if he had been in there, you know, possible that the Giants are in that postseason tournament that treated the Dodgers so well, just by his presence and his WAR. If we were to believe WAR as what it says it is, that they would have probably won, you know, almost 4 games according to his projected numbers going into 2020.
12 was the year he won MVP. 2012, right?
So I guess 2012 was his MVP year, yeah.
Now, the Giants' payroll for 2021 is looking like about $110 million. Now, that's well under the luxury tax threshold. Are they going to be buying? As a fan, would you prefer more of a pitching increase or a few more bats? Or a little bit of both?
I definitely would say a little bit of both. the power numbers increased in 2020. There's a number of factors on that, but I think having a
you want to stay pat with that infield though. I mean,
well, I mean the infield. I don't know if I'm standing pat with that. Yeah. That the infield. There's some big contracts that are there. I like Crawford, but you know he struggled in the field. He made some errors. The entire team really didn't play very well defensively, especially at the beginning of the abbreviated season. They got better. They definitely improved throughout the season. But even late in the season, they were making mental mistakes as well as physical errors.
Yeah.
And almost the mental mistakes are much worse than the actual physical errors.
Crawford's one thing that his bat was never great or even good at times, but his defense always saved him and kept his job
right.
Stable, you know, because it was almost worth having a average hitter for an above average glove,
which is usually.
But now that he's getting all these errors, it's like, all right, is it time to put him out to pasture, shop him around a little bit, maybe just platoon the guy? I don't know. I mean, how old is he now? No,
I don't have that.
He's 33.
Right away. Yeah.
He'll be 34, though, before the start of next season. So
going into his year 34, I mean, he's now officially an older player. He is, you know, it's tough because he is a homegrown player. He, you know, is even from the area. So it would be sad to see him go.
Well, I look at somebody like Andrelton Simmons, who is the sort of benchmark for stellar defensive shortstops.
Sure.
And who can also hit for average and has a little bit of pop. He's a free agent coming out. He's used to playing in the West. You know, but there's also Marcus Semien, obviously, who's plays even closer in the West.
He wouldn't even have to move.
Probably wouldn't even have to move. Yeah, exactly. And he's coming off of a very slow year, obviously, but he's still only 1 year removed from getting, third place in MVP voting.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, no, there's no question that Semien is a good, and there's a lot of good options out there, free agent. I believe there's even some up-and-comers in the Giants system that could conceivably compete for Crawford's job. I think that the competition is healthy, and that may have factored into a little bit of the revival that we saw in Crawford's bat this year, is that he realizes that, you know, he may have a little bit less job security coming in to this season. We'll see what happens. You know, I think just because of the size of his and Belt's contract in their last year, that they're going to be tough to move otherwise. So it's either eat that money and release them, or try to trade them somehow, or you know, stand pat. And when they come off the books, they come off the books. I'm excited to see what Farhan Zaidi has in mind for this offseason, because there's a lot of good players that I think would make a great addition to the Giants lineup.
Are you excited about the upcoming season, or do you see the San Diego Padres and the Los Angeles Dodgers as a unscalable wall?
I don't think they're unscalable, but it's definitely going to be a challenge. It's definitely going to be a tough climb back up to the top of the West. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, I don't know how much – I know that Zaidi had a plan, and I don't know how much this abbreviated season that we just had really affected that plan overall, but it must have had some sort of impact. But – I'm content to wait another year, see what Zaidi. I mean, they did so much better this year than was expected of them. Falling a game short, despite of it all, of making the postseason tournament. It was an exciting, it was a fun year of Giants baseball that exceeded the expectations going into it. So 2021, yeah, I'm always excited for a new season of baseball. I think the Giants will probably still be right around a 500 team next year, unless big splash is made and something really happens and then clicks, and then maybe they surprise San Diego and overtake them in the standings, make a wild card.
Well, with the presumptive NL Cy Young Award winner Trevor Bauer heading into free agency,
all right,
and not saying no to anybody, said he's entertaining offers from every team, even the MPB, Japanese leagues.
Yeah,
and he's from California. You know, right. Is it out of the question to see the Giants make a pretty big move for maybe a 4 or 5 year deal?
I hope Trevor not. Bauer. I hope that's something that they're considering and make Bauer an offer. I don't even go so far, Bauer, if you're listening to, please, if you do become a Giant, come in and talk to us. We'd love to. We'd love to podcast with you, because you definitely always have something interesting to say.
I think you'd be neat. Yeah, I think so.
That's where I am. I see this list of names that are available, and there's some really interesting names, especially on the hitter side. I mean, from Marcell Ozuna to Jock Peterson, it would all be kind of interesting to speculate.
Leave Jock Peterson out of it, okay? Although Ozuna, I'm a lot more afraid of, and I don't want to see him in the West at all, man. I know he kind of goes up and down. He had a monster season this year, and the fact that I don't even think he's a finalist for MVP is kind of strange. Mookie and Freddie Freeman, maybe is he a finalist? I don't know. I think he definitely should be.
He should definitely be considered. I mean, it was a pretty amazing.
He's season. Not. It's Machado, Freeman, and Betts. With the winners will be announced a week from today, I believe, November 12th. He Ozuna put up a monster season this year. Now his defense has gotten sort of worse every year since he actually won a Gold Glove, which I think a lot of us forget that Ozuna at one time won a Gold Glove in left field, but his arm isn't very good and his defense has suffered a little bit. But his bat in the postseason, like,
the Giants used to have a left fielder that didn't have the greatest arm and had a declining defense, but man, his bat was pretty darn good.
Well, there you go, and especially if the DH is going to be here to stay in the National League, which I'm sure at the end of this season, if not this season coming up, we'll just
Do you think that'll happen? Do you think they're going to implement it?
I do. Yeah, I do. I mean, the CBA ends at the end of 2021.
Right.
But there's a lot of grumblings that will stay, and because everybody seems to like it, at least all the players prefer it. I don't know about all the pitchers. I'm sure not all of them do, because I think sometimes they would rather just go up there and take some hacks so that they can in turn face another guy who's just up there hacking. But maybe they like sitting on the bench and not having to even think about it, and not even having to mentally put themselves out there like that, you know. Also, the injury risks, of course, that come with pitchers running the bases, you know. They're only up there, you know, a tenth of the time, I guess. A tenth of their at-bats, maybe,
right?
They get on or they get a hit. I don't like it. That's, you know, I'm just a salty old baseball. And
did you purist, mind it so much, this abbreviated season?
I didn't mind it until the postseason started, and then it was really bugging me.
And why was it bugging you?
Because
more?
Because the AL team in the World Series, at least, should have to play by the National League rules if National League team gets home field advantage. That's like a big advantage, especially this season when there was no home field advantage. I mean, there technically was, because the Dodgers didn't have to leave Arlington or Dallas, wherever the hell they were, the entire postseason. So in a sense, that's a advantage, but it's not really. And playing by your own rules is part of playing with your own fans. Or playing by the rules, I should say. The American League plays by their own rules. But, they didn't have the extra inning rule for the postseason, right? So why did they keep the DH rule? I guess just for continuity, I guess, because the pitchers didn't get any at-bats during the regular season. I guess that makes sense. It still didn't sit right with me. But I will admit, during the regular season,
Didn't miss it so much.
I wasn't thinking about it as much as I thought I would. Kind of like the mound visits when that first started, I was like, this is crazy, you know, and then rarely do teams ever even hit all six, you know.
Right.
The man on second, though, extra innings, no.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of that, although I think a lot of the players are. You know, you get one 15, 16-inning game, that puts your team back a few days. You know, you're tired now the rest of that week until you get another off day.
And even with the extra inning rule with the man on second base, there were several games this season that did go 13, 14, 15 innings.
I think there might have only been one, right, that went into the 15th, or was it even, not even the 15th, the 14th, the Dodger game, in like the first week of the season. I remember
And there's a couple that definitely went past more than 11 in innings. So it's like, is it as a big an advantage? Well, maybe, but maybe not as we might have thought. I mean,
well, it's not an advantage. I mean, it's like, because everybody, both teams get it. So I don't think it's really an advantage, but it does screw up stats, and it screws up pitcher stats, and it makes it all kind of weird and wonky, you know, because you can give up a leadoff
sacrifice.
Walk-off hit.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, yeah, it's really weird. Oh, yeah, leadoff sacrifice. I don't know. How do you feel about that in going on into the future?
I mean, I understand it. I don't think I'd really like it. I don't see those bases clean at the start of the inning. I understand, you know, in a tournament style like World Baseball Classic.
Yeah.
Why they would have it
in the Olympics World Baseball Classic.
Where you don't necessarily have time to entertain extended extra innings. But, I mean, the really long extra inning games are rare whether you're going to have a guy on second base or not. You know, I mean, how many times a season without this extra inning rule do games really go into 14, 15 innings and beyond? It really happens once, maybe twice a season. And so I don't know how necessary it really is. It has its time. It has place in the major league's regular season. I don't think it does.
Yeah.
I think these guys are playing millions of dollars play.
What about DH? Moving forward,
DH, that didn't bother me as much as I thought it would. I would be disappointed to see it implemented. I don't think at this point I could really make a strong enough case against it to convince anyone not to do it. Which is, you know, in itself a little bit disappointing. But, it didn't bother me as much as I thought it would. I didn't miss seeing the pitcher's hit.
One thing I will say, and you know, especially with all these new rules, the one rule that I was most surprised by in terms of my reaction or lack thereof was the 3-batter minimum. Gotta say, I didn't hate that, especially during the postseason. I kind of liked it. You know,
it did. It added a new
wrinkle. I feel dirty. I
shame. Shame.
Yeah, that.
It was a little bit more old timey ball. It was,
there was an element, and it really. You saw the difference in the strategy being played out. Definitely it was highlighted more in the postseason than it was during the regular season. In the regular season, it didn't seem to be that much of an issue. At least it wasn't in any of the games that I watched. It was talked about occasionally, but it really didn't come up until really the postseason. And then you started seeing where the matchups were less than ideal in some situations, where obviously you would bring this pitcher in to face this batter,
right,
but not the guy behind him. That got interesting, and I could see where I could see both clearly see both sides of the argument for that. But yeah, it wasn't too outrageously bad. I don't think that would bother me so much. But
yeah, it was weird. It was almost like it was like a, you know, my whole thing with the DH or lack thereof is that it just makes the manager's job that much easier. You know, you don't really have to think about double switches or
right,
think about anything like that, guys, like where they are in the lineup, stuff like that. But the three batter minimum did seem to make the manager, at least from the outside, I don't know if it actually did, but to make them do a little bit more work and try to figure it out and run not just the one-to-one numbers, but you have to look at a minimum three guys, unless it's like the end of the inning or something. But I don't know. I could be reading that all wrong.
Maybe in the long run, it might be better overall for relief pitchers, and that you're going to get less of these left-handed specialist guys and guys who want to make in the majors as a bullpen guy, got to get people out on both sides of the plate.
Right.
You're just going to have to, if you're going to come into a game, you're going to be expected to get more than one out in all likelihood. So you got to be ready to get everyone out, not just that tough left-handed batter.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's good for their psyche. And, you know, most guys want to pitch.
Yeah.
They don't want to just get one out, you know. Right. Now, there was a lot of talk this postseason because it's usually Joe Buck or, you know, somebody else that doesn't seem to watch a lot of baseball throughout the season, but a lot of polarizing views on the shift, even amongst close friends. You know, I heard a lot of ban the shift. I think John Smoltz even was talking about that. As a pitcher, it can be maddening, I'm sure, at times when a routine ball up the middle just finds a hole because there's nobody there, or to the left side of the field if it's a lefty at the bat, you know. I don't have a problem with it at all. I feel like if they're giving you that whole side of the field, use it. You know, the one way to kill the shift instead of banning it, because, you know, stop banning stuff for Christ's sake. The one way to kill it is just to beat it over and over and over. You know?
Yeah.
And we saw Corey Seager, Bellinger, Muncy, all lefties beat this shift just by hitting the cover off the ball. But I don't even mean that. I mean just slap a little hit to the left, throw down a bunt, you know, or just hit it harder like the Dodgers were doing. We were beating a lot of those shifts.
And I think the old school managers that now we have two going into the 21 season, we almost saw it happen in the ALCS. Dusty Baker called bunts against the shifting Rays, and it almost won them that series. And I think it would have been really interesting had it ultimately worked and the Astros won the ALCS because of Dusty Baker calling a play against the shift. Against all of the metrics, you know, even if they shift, it's better to hit like normal instead of trying to, you know, do something different. Dusty Baker did something different, and it certainly won him one game. It almost won him more. So maybe La Russa will have an answer to some of these shifting, because the last time that he managed was a World Series win for him, and the shifting really was not nearly as prominent as it is even now 9 years later.
I agree with everything you say except for the part about it would be cool to see the Astros win the pennant. But I agree. Although La Russa himself back in 2011 was a bit radical, you know, so he's not completely this sort of salty old guy, although he is for a lot of other reasons, which I'm sure we'll get into a little bit later. But, you know, he was using the bullpen a lot like we see now back in that 2011 series.
Oh, yeah. I mean, no, I'm not saying that La Russa isn't an analytical numbers guy. I think I think he'll be a great kind of having audio difficulties over there.
I am the goddamn manager, and I'm going to run this goddamn team.
Yeah. So I think you know, it would be a good balance between the old school and new school. Maybe I'll find a way to get through this shift. But yeah, there's no reason to ban the shift. It's just the trend of the way the game is being played right now. And if you don't like it, well, do something about it.
Right.
Don't just complain about it.
Hit them where they ain't.
Yep. I mean, it was
true still to this day.
Babe Ruth said, you know, they're not over on the other side of the fence, so that's where I hit them.
Yeah, they never shifted on Ichiro, even though he's a lefty pull hitter. They never did that.
Yeah,
because they know he'll just hit it the other way.
Slap it the other way and get a double.
Like 100%. I mean, that's baseball. Uh-huh. Yeah, enough of this ban the shift stuff. I will admit, it is super annoying when you hit into the shift and you're watching your team, and you're just like, Jesus, like, there's not supposed to be a guy there.
Yeah.
Like during that San Diego series, I mean, they were shifting like crazy. Machado was basically a second right fielder. Yeah. And it was angering me, but it was angering me more because the Dodgers weren't just laying down those easy bunts.
Yeah, well, I think they made up for it by the sheer highway robbery that Bellinger and Betts pulled off on Tatis and company. But yeah.
Oh, yeah!
There are some great catches made out there. It was impressive to watch.
That was just as impressive as the bats, I will say. When you rob a home run, it's almost as if you hit a home run. You know, it really is. And the, you know, that park, Globe Life Park, you know, it was a really interesting park.
Yeah, it seemed like it played fairly fair. It was big.
Yeah.
The ball carried when the roof was open.
Yeah.
Certainly it was possible to hit home runs. But there's a lot of room to roam, so to speak, out there.
Yeah, I think MLB was happy with that showcase of the brand new park, and it's kind of fun to see a new park like that.
And certainly on such a big stage too. It's definitely good to see.
Mookie Betts wins his first National League Gold Glove.
Yeah,
first of many, I would imagine.
I would imagine so. The Gold Glove this year's were determined by a different process.
They actually used DRS, defensive run save, or
it was all metrics based. Usually these awards are voted on by the managers and players, but since anyone only ever saw those people in their division or in the American League or the opposite league.
Yeah, their zones.
You know, they not everyone got to see everyone, so they didn't have the thing. So
I like that.
Completely determined by the metrics. It was something having to do with the number of chances versus the percentage of the fielding percentage all factored in
plus defensive runs saved. That's kind of how it should be. When you're talking about defense, there we have some really good modern day statistics, and you know, you can see the you can't hide the numbers. You know, if you're missing balls, if you're not making the plays, if you're not hitting your cutoff man, whatever, if you're passing a lot of balls, if you're a catcher, that's all recorded nowadays. You know, it's and a lot of those are adjusted for ballparks as well, you know.
Right.
We choose truth over facts.
Yeah, it's to me, it makes a lot of sense. You know, for MVP or things like that, that's a little bit different. But that's when, you know, WAR comes in, and WAR plays a big factor because that sort of takes
in everything.
A big
factor,
as well.
but it can't be the only factor.
Can't be the only. No. If it were, Mookie would win outright, but I don't know. I think they're going to give it to Freddie this season. But yeah, in terms of the Gold Glove, that's great. You know, we saw Nolan Arenado lead all players defensive value, 9.3.
Yeah, got his 8th.
And 15 defensive runs saved. Yeah, 8 out of 8. It's pretty great. Pretty impressive. He's in good company. You know, the 8 consecutive Gold Gloves marks the second longest streak to start a career in the MLB behind Ichiro with 10. And I don't see Arenado not getting another 2 more. You know, his streak is the longest, obviously, among active players, and the 3rd longest all-time among third basemen. Name those 2 third basemen. Big-name third basemen.
Let's see. I want to say... All right, I can put the music on pressure.
I'm going to get sued if I play that too long, so, you know.
You know what I like.
I'm not going to get sued for that one, though.
I guess
most famous third baseman of all time.
It's right there on the tip of my tongue. I can't spit it out.
You'll have to speak up. I'm wearing a towel.
Brooks Robinson. 16 years. 16 years. Yeah.
Wow.
1960 to 1975. And Mike Schmidt from 76 to 84.
Mike Schmidt. Okay.
Yeah. 9. So, you know, Arenado can get that next year. Javi Baez, you know, he didn't have a bat this season at all. I don't know what he was playing with, but I thought it was stickball or something, maybe. He's
playing with his glove, though.
Yeah, he definitely
brought
was.
Brought his leather.
Got the shortstop for the National League. Yeah. And, of course, Mookie in right field, his 5th straight. With 11 defensive runs saved. And Max Fried, Mr. Undefeated. Throw on a Gold Glove on top of that. That was pretty cool to
see. Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Then Anthony Rizzo over at first base.
3rd straight, right? Yeah.
3rd straight, 4th overall. No, he's definitely a great first baseman out there. He's done well for the Cubs.
Oh, yeah. He's kind of like the opposite of, or the opposite side of the field, but the same sort of presence I feel like Justin Turner is for the Dodgers. You know, just the consummate captain of that team, even, you know, the unofficial official captain of that team. Oh, I dare stir up the ire of the crowd bringing up Justin Turner's name. But thus far, I've seen no other Dodgers test positive or anybody in that clubhouse for COVID, and maybe his positive or inconclusive test.
Turner just got a ton of
Jesus.
Bad press.
Oh my God.
I mean, they lit in them from here to New York City.
With nobody happier than Kevin Cash, I would imagine, take some of the heat off of him.
I took discussion about his possible MVP for the Dodgers World Series away from that, but now there's been nothing. The only thing that I've found so far was an interview with I guess it was Cody Bellinger about 5 days ago, saying, you know, that he was still symptom free. So I'm imagine is
Turner was still
Turner
sim- yeah.
was symptom free, and that's the only thing that we've heard about it. So seems to me that suggests it is a false positive. It was right at the end of the bubble. That he'd been in a bubble for
right
a month at that point. How is it possible that he test positive?
Yeah,
and if it was that big of a deal with an inconclusive test the day before, he shouldn't have even been at the stadium to start in the first place.
Well, it's because they've had so many inconclusive tests that were even false positives that, you know, they didn't. And, well, okay, that brings up a sort of weird conspiracy-ish theory. Not really a conspiracy, but I remember Trevor Bauer, before all this started, was sort of positing on one of his vlogs, if MLB does find somebody positive during the postseason, will they even publicly announce it, or will they try to sweep it under the rug? Now, at the time that he said that, you know, nobody really thought much about that. But then pulling Turner out in the 7th inning or the 8th inning of World Series Game 6.
That they were winning.
Yeah, by one run. I mean, it starts to get your gears turning. Did MLB want a Game 7? They pull out the Dodgers' arguably best hitter and sort of, you know, captain of that team, the mental giant of that team.
Maybe,
you know?
Maybe if they pulled him, maybe if they pulled him in the third inning, maybe that would have been have a little bit more water. But at the seventh inning, it's kind of ridiculous.
Just really weird. There's a lot of weirdness around all of that. And of course, he did not celebrate on the field with the team. He waited like an hour after for the group photo, and then that's when all the controversy came out. But I don't think any player out there, Dodgers or not, can blame him, the heart and soul of that team.
Giving a hard time about even giving his wife a kiss. Well, he lives with his wife. Whether he's positive or not, she's probably going to get it just because of proximity.
She might have given it to him.
She might have, but we never know. But she'd been in the bubble for the month, too.
Right.
Exactly. So if he really did test positive, that is probably on MLB more than anyone else.
It's 100% on MLB. If it's that serious, get him out of there. Shuttle him out. Physically remove him from that stadium. Not just put him in a room and be like, now, Justin, don't you celebrate. You know, now we're going to leave, but please stay in here and stare at the TV
monitor. It's like telling a dog to stay with a plate of fresh bacon on the counter
and you leave
the room. Yeah.
Exactly. It's so stupid. Oh my God! I can't believe it. All right, moving on. That brings us to this week's Ig Nobel Award of the Week.
A lot of candidates. Turner certainly got the press of one.
Yeah, all the whiny writers and op eds about shame on you. We want an apology. Get out of here. Throw all that out. Shame, shame. No, we're not going to give it to them.
No, we're not. We're not going to give it to
the White Sox.
We're not going to give it to necessarily to the White Sox. No, we're not going to give it to Tampa's manager. We're not going to give it to.
No, I love Tampa's manager. I love that guy. I want to buy him a Harry and David gift basket. Okay.
We're not going to give it to the sound engineer who keeps playing that bit.
I'm telling you, we are hiring. Somebody please save me from myself.
No,
this is not a drill.
I think we have to circle back here to 2017 and the fallout from there and a certain ban from the game that lasted a year and only a year as AJ Hinch was hired by this week's Ig Nobel Award winner, the Detroit Tigers.
Bring out the gimp.
So not much of a punishment. You get to sit out for a year and then get hired the day after the ban lifts.
They were on the phone with him and within the hour after that last strike in Game 6.
Of course, but he didn't sign on the dotted line until the next day.
No, well, Friday, technically. They talked with him Wednesday. Flew him out Friday. He was officially their manager. Yeah, I mean, and this is of course what we talked about almost a year ago now. I guess back in February, with this 1 year token suspension, this completely artificial, just you know, cookie cutter response to for punishment for these guys. This is why they needed a lifetime ban.
Or at least more than a year.
Yeah. Now I figured. I mean, I knew he would be working in Major League Baseball again. I assumed, because I am an idiot, that they would have made him a bench coach or a pitching coach or a catcher's
coach,
whatever.
Make him earn his way back
up. A bullpen coach. Yeah. Make him work through the system. No, just give him Leland's
keys
old
to the
job.
Kingdom,
I mean, come on. It's gross. I know a lot of the Detroit fans are probably very torn because they're like, yeah, this guy has a lot of postseason experience.
I don't know any Tiger fans, do you?
No, I don't really think. I know they exist, but at the same
Magnum
time.
PI, I don't think counts.
It wouldn't be fun to have a manager who everybody hates. You have to kind of like him because he's your manager, or at least you don't have to hate him, and you want to see your team do good, so you want to hope that your manager does well. But when you travel anywhere, and hopefully there will be fans, here every time they announce Hinch's name, he's going to get booed incessantly, as he should be.
Or get trash.
Oh, sure.
Cans banged on him.
Of course, yeah. So, I don't know about the fans of Detroit. All I know is from the outside looking in, it looks bad. It looks really gross, and I'm not surprised. But at the same time, I mean, if I were a Tigers fan, would I be more worried that Hinch, was more of like a passive-aggressive kind of manager and trying to get that thing, you know, smashing monitors, supposedly, whatever, during his tenure with the Astros? Or would I be more worried that he is just a pushover and he has zero control over his team, a young team whom he had known for many years? You know, it's not like he had just get flung into the job with the Astros. All these players were doing this thing right. that he knew nothing about, and he was just like, all right, well, maybe. No, he knew about it.
He'd been working with them for several years. Yeah. Absolutely.
And he had zero influence over those players. I mean, to me, that I would be way more worried about that as a fan of a team that he has no control over than, you know, his inability to sort of stop it. It's his inability to control the room that would worry me. But, you know, what do I know? I'm a Dodger fan.
Yeah. You are.
Hey now.
But it's not, 'cause it's not for the White Sox, though, for hiring a near octogenarian Tony La Russa.
No.
Who has very bad optics in terms of his political leanings and his, you know, approval of like forced deportations and just outward, you know, vitriol. That notwithstanding, to be him with, to be the manager of somebody like Tim Anderson, you know, who espouses the exact opposite views beliefs of an old timey manager. I think in that sense, it'll be kind of fun to see.
It'll be interesting to watch. I think La Russa is a good enough manager, proven enough manager, that he'll command a certain amount of respect just because he knows what he's talking about when it comes to baseball. And if you're talking about between the lines, I don't think any sort of political philosophy or attitudes, you know, outside the lines will affect too much.
You don't think so?
No, there's plenty of examples out there.
This isn't the
90s.
You know, this is like, it's very easy to go back and see what he's tweeted or the opinions that he's formally written out in support of certain, you know, let's say.
But when it comes to
illiberal measures.
Now, when it comes to playing the game, being between the lines, does any of that really matter?
But I think it does now. I do.
Well,
you think Curt Schilling's going to get a job in baseball anytime soon? Think Aubrey Huff is going to get a job in baseball anytime soon? I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying it does affect people nowadays. And you can't hide from it anymore.
No, you can't hide from it. But he hasn't been out of baseball. He's had front office jobs this whole 9 years. I mean, now he's being asked back down into the dugout. So it's not like he's been out of the game and is coming back into it. You know, if any of these things that he's said and tweeted about was really a problem, then he would have been drummed out of the front offices that he's been in. Does he have, you know, will he, I think the bigger question is will he be able to really bridge the generational gap now with his players? You know, we start thinking about in 2011, he managed his last game, which was a World Series win for the St. Louis Cardinals. It was his third World Series win. Second with the Cardinals, and he's won World Series in both the National and the American League, and he's dealt with some very extreme personalities, and dealt with his own bit of cheating fallout as well.
In an era when we're talking about trying to diversify the hirings and trying to switch it up a little bit, have not just younger, but maybe people coming from different backgrounds to come and manage teams. You get rid of a manager who is actually up for manager of the year for the White Sox.
Sure.
And you replace Rick Renteria, of course, and you replace him with one of the oldest people in baseball, aside from maybe Vin Scully, to come and manage the team. Like, I think the controversy from a lot of baseball perspective is, you know, okay, they hired him, but who did they not hire? Who's not getting a job because La Russa is coming back, you know? Not that I care really one way or another. I think it's the best guy for the job, you know? But I don't know. It does seem a little weird, especially for like a young, vibrant, full of energy kind of team like the White Sox and Rick Renteria actually bringing them to the postseason. Of course, they lost in the first round, maybe because of Rick Renteria. But, you know, you don't give him another chance? I mean, seems a little strange.
It does seem a little bit strange, and who knows really what they're thinking about, except winning a title with the really great young team that they have. You know, and just you know,
he is the third winningest manager of all time. So.
He is. There's something to be said for that, but you know, the current longest tenured manager in the major leagues right now is Craig Counsell. Craig Counsell was still an active player in 2011.
Really?
And another little bit, Dusty Baker,
who's still playing?
71. Dusty Baker's last manager as a player was Tony La Russa.
Wow.
And Dusty Baker hasn't played in quite some time.
I believe La Russa also managed Minnie Minosa, too. So now, from him to Luis Robert, kind of full circle, man. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, La Russa has had a pretty incredible career, and this is his second stint with the White Sox. Maybe he can make something of it this time.
Maybe. We'll see.
He has to probably beat the Dodgers.
I don't really care one way or another. Now, one team in the East that is making a lot of noise is obviously the Mets.
The
new owner.
Yes.
Steve Cohen buys the Mets, and I believe the 29 other owners haven't yet officially.
No, the owners have approved the sale.
Okay.
The New York mayor has approved the sale. All and now, I think it just becomes like the money issue to close the deal, and probably going to happen sometimes this week.
Somewhere between $2.4 and $2.45 billion.
Yeah,
the highest price ever paid for.
That's an interesting range. What's $50 million between friends?
Now, his former hedge fund SAC Capital, paid a $1.8 billion fine back in 2013 to settle a little insider trading charge.
Hmm.
His current company is being sued for gender discrimination as well.
Well, it fits right in with the whole Bernie Madoff whole thing, but, you know.
You know, Cohen is worth supposedly about $14 billion, so I guess, you know. And he's, I believe he's from Queens. He's a lifelong Mets fan, and I think that's
actually
pretty
cool. But a good thing there.
It's pretty cool, yeah. To be a Mets fan right now, it must be feeling pretty nice. You know, I remember when the Dodgers finally rid themselves of Frank McCourt. It was like we had won something, you know. Mm. It was just like, oh my God, finally, you know. And then, I don't know if it's coincidental, but we've won almost every year in the playoffs since then. Yeah, 8 straight West titles, obviously. And, I know what that's like, and it's nice, even if he doesn't make moves right away, it is nice to know that the owner of the team isn't just an owner. He is a fan.
No,
and he wants to see them
do good. It was true in 93 with the Giants when they were saved from a move to Tampa Bay by the Peter McGowan group. Peter McGowan was definitely a Giants fan going into the whole thing, and it was great to see this group of investors keep the team and outwardly show fandom towards the team that they just bought.
Then they got Bonds, right?
That was the first big deal that they did, is they went out, they signed Bonds, and...
It's a big deal.
It worked out for them in the long run, I think.
Yeah, so it's got to feel good to be a Mets fan right now. I mean, that's, I don't know how many times you could have ever said that.
Probably not quite as good as being a Dodgers fan, but, you know.
Yeah, I dug up my old Andre Ethier shirt just for this podcast, just to make you look at it. I couldn't find it. It's taken a while for all the new.
Yeah, I couldn't decide
come.
if that was Ethier or Nomo.
Nomar? Noma?
No, not Nomar. Oh, Nomo.
Nomo.
416.
Oh, yeah.
The tornado.
Nomo. That's right. Something that was cool, I thought, to see, seeing as how John Lester may not be coming back to the Cubs, is him going out and dropping almost $50,000 in free beer to the fans of Chicago. How about that?
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. Free beer is always a good deal.
That's like one of those cool things that you think, like, yeah, if I was a rich athlete or something, I would spread it around and stuff. But there's no real like good way to do it. It's kind of hard. I remember Patrick Mahomes last Super Bowl, he went to a steakhouse in KC or something, and as he was leaving, he literally paid for everybody in the restaurant's entire tab. Like, that's pretty cool. You know?
That is pretty cool. I know during the World Series here this past year, after the pretty incredible Game 4, when the Rays won in such dramatic fashion after that game, Hunter Pence was in a local restaurant here in San Francisco and bought the entire restaurant a round of limoncello.
What a jerk. Like, I don't want limoncello. You're going to have it and you're going to enjoy it. No,
it was an Italian restaurant. So
okay, all right. Was it Limoncello's, the actual
restaurant? I don't know which restaurant. The restaurant in question wasn't named. It's just the fact that Hunter Pence was there and bought a round for everyone.
That's
after
a really
the Dodgers
weird.
Lost.
It's a really strange round to buy. I mean, you know, hey, I like limoncello. It's great. Yeah,
it
except
is.
For the bad stuff. But,
especially
I mean,
after an Italian meal, it's great.
Yeah, but if you're just sitting, that's fine. I'll give him some credit for that. John Lester, I'm not too keen on the beer he was given out, because it was a very specific beer. It was his favorite beer.
And what is his favorite beer that you have a problem with?
Actually, it's a beer that I think you actually enjoy, my dear co-host here, Miller Lite.
Miller Lite. If I'm going to drink Miller, it's the MGD, not the light beer. I'm not a fan of light beers in general. But
Kyle! Yeah. Over 4,800 beers from Friday to Sunday. Yeah, he spent about $47,000 over the weekend, which included $31,000 in beers, but $16,000 in gratuity, which, I applaud him for that.
That is definitely good.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. At, some local Chicago bars, four different ones. That's pretty cool. It's sort of like a farewell, because he didn't get, renew his option or whatever, and so he may or may not ever pitch again. He may or may not ever pitch again in Chicago, so it was kind of like a nice farewell. I think he was saying he and a few teammates have been talking about, like, what's the best way to do something, and they always kept coming back to beer because, hey, I mean, first of all, Chicago,
right.
But, I thought that was pretty cool. At least, some good news.
Sure.
I mean, there's a lot of good news for me and the Dodger fans.
Well, it is. I would say I got, I've got ultimately two little bits left here before we get into the trivia,
right?
For the day, I have a season-ending stretch that involves next year. But an interesting fact that I came across was since 2016, the last team to beat the Dodgers in a series has gone on to win the World Series. So by that logic, the last team to beat the Dodgers in a series was the Braves. Colorado Rockies.
Wait, what?
The Rockies were the only team in 2020 to beat the Dodgers in a series.
Oh.
So, by that logic, your 2021 world champion, Colorado Rockies.
Hey now.
Yeah, yeah.
You heard it here first, but beyond that, remind us of our trivia question from last week.
Ooh, yeah. It's been, you know, I I got it. Let me. Last week's trivia question. Which team had the best record to start the first 60 games of a season? Pretty simple, pretty straightforward. I thought we already did this one, but no, we didn't.
I don't know.
And this will conclude our 60-game, 60-60 theme trivia.
Right, yes. Right. The season is over. I've got a totally different question this week. But
good.
We got, I know that it's not the Baltimore Orioles. They probably qualify for the worst 60-game start.
Possibly.
Not 81 season, but maybe it was 82. It was really bad. 28 games in a row losing. Yeah, that's not good.
Who had the best record to start the first 60 games?
Any guesses?
Yeah, I'm going to read these and then I'll see if we got Cooper in Santa Rosa says the 0-1 Mariners. 0-1 Mariners.
Interesting guess. That was definitely a good team.
Now, while of course going on to win a record 116 games, the 0-1 Mariners started the first 60 games with an impressive, very impressive, 47-13 record. And it's not the record though. That's pretty hard to beat.
Yeah, it would seem so.
They didn't just finish strong. To have a record, to win 116 games, yeah,
win a fair clip of all your games.
You gotta be hot. Yeah, I got Mike in Flagstaff says probably the 98 Yankees or I guess the 0-1 Mariners. Yeah, okay. Those 98 Yanks. Who'd finished with 115 wins, mind you, started that season going 46-14. I had to look that one up. I had to look up all of these, actually.
Yeah, well.
but yeah. So, again, very close. Not close enough. That's one win away from the Mariners just a couple years later. And we got Taylor in Bay City, Michigan. Ooh, hey.
There you go.
Tigers fan, probably. I don't know. Unless it's a transplant. Says the 87 Brewers. Ooh.
87 Brewers. That's a team that I didn't consider.
The 87 Brew Crew did tie the record set by the 82 Braves by opening the first 13 games undefeated. A record that I believe still stands. Unfortunately, they went on to go 32-28 for that first 60-game stretch. But yeah, first 13. Imagine going 13-0. That'd be pretty good.
Yeah,
that'd be pretty nice.
So definitely be a nice way to start the season. Hello, baseball.
Yeah.
This is fun.
Nobody got it.
All right.
You want to throw a little guess on me here?
No. In fact, I'm not. I was a little bit distracted to do any research on this.
I'll give you a hint.
This.
It is not the 2017 Dodgers. Okay. It's not the 2020 Dodgers either, although the only team to not have 20 losses, which is pretty nice. But no, it was not them either. It's a team that is very near and dear to your heart, my friend.
Oh, yeah.
Well, sort of.
Okay.
It's too much suspense. Yeah, that would be the 1912 New York Giants.
Going way back.
Way back. They went 48-11-1.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Basically one extra game. Well, one and a half games, I guess. It ties, you know, the old days before lights at the stadium,
yeah,
I guess.
Game
right?
Called on account of darkness.
I'm assuming
perhaps.
That's what that's all about. Yeah.
And they just didn't want to pick it back up in the morning.
You didn't. I mean, you're a Giants fan. I thought you would have had this.
Yeah,
you
know, I didn't.
A New York Giants fan.
The thing, I was not yet a baseball fan in 1912.
In the womb, about to come out, or
no? I think most of my immediate family had not yet arrived in the United States. Even well, maybe. 1915, yeah, they were probably here, but I certainly was not. But
yeah, so no winners, no dinners, no beer. No. But maybe there's a little bit. That was a kind of a tough question. What do you got for me this week?
Well, I'm going back. I struggled to find something. I did find this most compelling thing. There was one pitcher who faced two of arguably the most feared batters in baseball history.
Corey Seager.
But certainly, most definitely in Yankees history. There's one pitcher who faced both Babe Ruth and Mickey Mantle. One pitcher,
both
whose career spanned both the Babe and the Mick, faced them both. Who was that pitcher?
Wow, this isn't a trick question.
No, it has a real question. It has a real answer. It's
pretty
not a
good.
Trick question.
I think I have an idea, but I'll save it for next week.
Right.
Leave your answers on Twitter at West Coast Bias BB. You can email us baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. Leave the answer on the comment section on Podomatic or you know
find
wherever
us on
you
Facebook
can.
West Coast Bias Baseball. We're around.
Yeah, that's it.
We're around. Let us know. Say something. Say hello. Say boo Dodgers. Don't say go Astros. You'll get banned.
From San Francisco, California, I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul. Remember, baseball is life. The rest, just details.
Go watch some baseball.